From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, sitting in for Brian Mackey today. It's Friday. Welcome. The weekend is near. That means it's time for our Friday Reporter Roundtable, where we showcase what is making news across the state. In today's roundtable, Rockford and DeKalb and the Metro East. Joining us now to talk about stories in those respective areas is Jenna Dooley. She's news director of WNIJ Northern Public Radio. Jenna, welcome to the 21st Show. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me on, Christine.
Also joining us is Will Bauer. He's Metro East reporter for KWMU St. Louis Public Radio. Will, welcome to the 21st. You as well.
Thanks for having me.
And you can join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can send us an email. The address is talk@21stshow.org. Again, talk@21stshow.org. Jenna, let's start with you. So according to the Partnership for College Completion, just one in five community college students who are placed in developmental classes end up ultimately graduating from college. Firstly, can you tell us what are developmental classes and how is one community college in your area trying to improve that statistic?
Thousands of Illinois college students, they'll spend money to take a class, but they often there'll be a test to find out where they're placed. So whether it's English 101 or 102 or where they're, you know, math 101. But some students aren't ready for the entry level class at the college level. So they'll take a developmental education class. Well, the catch is they won't earn credit for that. And they're spending time. And like you mentioned, the statistics show that it can be difficult to get that move from a developmental class to walking across the stage and getting a diploma.
And can you tell us about the college in your area that's trying to improve that statistic?
Oh, yeah, that's right. So Kishwaukee College in Malta is trying something called co-requisites. So here's an example. Students, maybe they're not placed in English 101, but what they'll do is they'll put them in English 101 where they can earn credit like any other student, but then the student stays an extra hour after the regular class to get additional one-on-one help. So by the time the semester is over, they're getting credit for the class English 101, and they're getting the support they need to set them up for success.
And Will, I want to bring you into the conversation now and shift gears a bit. So last week, about 260 steel and iron workers at Granite City Works were laid off. Can you remind us about what happened there and what reactions have you been hearing?
Yeah, so it's a big deal for Granite City. It's the town's largest employer. It's very much a steel town, and whenever the mill takes a hit, the rest of the community feels it. So parent company U.S. Steel announced earlier last month that the layoffs would be because of a downturn, or what they were predicting in a downturn because of the ongoing auto workers strike. Now, union leadership here in Granite City will tell you that, one, they don't supply a lot of steel to the auto industry, and two, this is just a good way for corporations to pit the working class against each other. But regardless, U.S. Steel says these layoffs for the 260 to 265 iron and steel workers should be temporary or less than 6 months. So the union has met with their members and they've kind of briefed them on, you know, how to file for state unemployment and what kinds of benefits they would have through these 6 months. And union leadership say this is definitely a blow to morale, even if it's temporary. You know, for those 265, the union is expecting that a lot of them will seek other work and probably won't ever return to the steel mill because of something like this. And one of the reasons union leadership say they're especially disappointed in this move, and actually city and congressional leadership are kind of in agreement, is because these layoffs are maybe a way, they say, for U.S. Steel to skirt federal law on mass layoffs. Basically, if these do end up being permanent layoffs, an employer would have to give 60 days notice, which did not happen here. And right, that would give employees time to figure out what's next for them during those 60 days. But because these are temporary, less than 6 months, U.S. Steel does not have to give that notice. And so there will be many watching to see if U.S. Steel does actually bring these jobs back by March. And if not, they would be required to pay those workers for their labor and benefits, to back pay them, I should say. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely something that we will keep an eye on.
Yeah. Jenna, back to you now in Northern Illinois. So the future of a nursing home in DeKalb remains in limbo. And for those who aren't familiar, what's going on there?
Wow, this one has become quite a quagmire, and Maria Gardner-Lara has been covering this for WNIJ, but it's really an important story for taxpayers outside of DeKalb County as well, because we're seeing this question of public bodies looking to sell nursing home facilities to private hands in other areas of the state because they're running into cost overruns. But there are concerns that quality of care is at risk when this care is privatized. So the DeKalb County government has owned their long-term care facility since 1853. It has 190 beds, but it's running millions of dollars in the red. There's a variety of factors for that, but county officials decided to move forward to sell it. But here's the rub. They got two bids to buy the facility. They chose one, but then both of the bidders joined forces after the vote, which caught a lot of people off guard. Then it had to go before state regulators. They will not move along the deal until they learn more about how the folks behind the sale can prove their record of care. And I will say, public comment has been strongly against privatization, but in testimony, those involved in the purchase are defending that they're saying, well, okay, you're saying we have these one-star reviews for the facilities that we've bought elsewhere, but we're buying up already low-rated facilities, and we're trying to stabilize them and improve them. So they're asking residents to keep an open mind. And they say, okay, if the alternative is no buyer and the county wants out, the facility might just close. Mm-hmm. So the county's left with a deal in limbo, and now they have to craft next year's budget that may or may not include running a nursing home.
Wow, a lot to follow there. Will, let's come back to you. The Scott Air Force Base in St. Clair County, they've had a new commander for about 90 days now. Can you tell us who he is and what kinds of changes we can expect to see at the base going forward?
Yeah, so Colonel John Poole is his name, and he runs the 375th Wing. And there are definitely bigger dogs on the base, but it's a big deal because in all, the base employs roughly 13,000 people. It's home to U.S. Transportation Command. So anything in the military that moves all across the world, whether that's fuel, troops, vehicles, it's run out of Scott. So there are some other things there, but that's the big one. Anyway, the 375th is the host wing. They like, in military speak, that's how they would say it. So anyway, the host wing is responsible for making sure that those daily operations can continue and function properly. So Colonel John Poole is the new commander of the 375th. And like you said, he's about 3 months into his job. And he's kind of spent his first 3 months just figuring out day-to-day operations and everything that happens on the base, which is a lot. One of the things that he mentioned that he was kind of unaware of before starting this was there's actually a U.S. Department of Agriculture team that's assigned to manage wildlife on the big airfield. You know, those would be people making sure that there's not a stray deer that's trying to cross the runway while a plane is landing. So anyway, it's those kind of details that he's been trying to nail down. And it helps that he's not completely new to Scott. He'd served in two previous assignments at Scott before this. But anyway, he's now kind of entered the process where he's going to start forming his strategic plan for the next 18 months, or roughly 18 months, because they're about a two-year tenure in their assignments before they move on. And so those could be things in his strategic plan that he'd be addressing, like things like infrastructure, because it's a pretty old base, or maybe continuing to move the base toward being combat ready. And that's a fairly new initiative that's coming from the Pentagon and Department of Defense on down. And basically, they want everyone on bases, whether that's fighter pilots to support staff, to be ready if there does happen to be a conflict. So after Colonel Poole gets all those details sorted out, informing his strategic plan, he says he'll start to implement them and make some changes.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey. We're conducting our Friday Reporter Roundtable, where we highlight two regions of Illinois and hear what's making news there. Rockford and DeKalb and the Metro East are represented in today's roundtable by Jenna Dooley, news director at WNIJ Northern Public Radio, and Will Bauer, Metro East reporter for KWMU St. Louis Public Radio. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 800-222-9455. Will, there's a new military memorial that's coming to Grafton, Illinois, in the Metro East area. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So Grafton, if you're not familiar, is a small Mississippi River community north of the St. Louis metro. It's home to about 700 people. And they just launched a fundraising initiative for this military memorial. And the idea kind of came together from the town's mayor. He is a retired Navy colonel. And since he's retired, he's become a military historian of sorts. And he's done a lot of traveling to Normandy, France. And that's, of course, where allies landed at D-Day during World War II back in 1944. And in between his travels, he'd come back to Grafton, and he noticed that some of the Grafton cliffs along the Mississippi River really look like some of the cliffs in Normandy, where those troops would have climbed while being pummeled by artillery and gunfire from the Germans on D-Day. And the idea then came to him to use these cliffs to build a memorial. So the end goal will be a recreation of Point du Hoc, which is a famous cliff from D-Day. It'll have a German pillbox or bunker, fancy word for a bunker, at the top of this cliff in Grafton. Bronze statues of soldiers will be climbing the cliff. There will also be a plaza and small museum below. And Grafton's mayor says this is a really fitting project for the small town. It's already kind of a tourism-centric town because half of it is built on the Mississippi River. And also about 17% of the population of Grafton are veterans, which is a pretty big proportion. So anyway, this memorial project will come with a $6 million price tag, and it's all funded by donations. So on Wednesday, the city had collected $130,000, and they're hoping to get their fundraising in order to complete the memorial in the next 4 years.
And Jenna, I understand Northern Illinois University is expected to apply for a federal designation as a Hispanic-serving institution. What does that mean exactly?
Each fall, public universities release their 10-day enrollment. It's kind of an apples-to-apples comparison of the student population. So in the latest figures, NIU now has the largest undergraduate population of Latinx students in university history. Latinx students currently represent a quarter of NIU's full-time undergraduate population. So it does put the school on pace to be fully designated, as you mentioned, a Hispanic-serving institution. It's more than just a title. A federal designation provides opportunities for resources and funding. So the next steps, NIU will submit an official application. They have a committee working on that now, demonstrating that they've met all eligibility requirements. Takes a little bit of time. The U.S. Department of Education could recognize NIU in 2026 at the earliest. They do need to maintain a quarter population of Latinx students. So like I mentioned, there is currently a working group dedicated to preparing for the designation.
And on a broader scale, what does enrollment at NIU look like this year?
Total enrollment is, for the school, 15,504 students. That is a decrease, a slight decrease, about 1% from last fall. One number that did come out is new first-year enrollment dropped nearly 10%. So that's the reason the total numbers didn't drop, because transfer student enrollment and retention increased. So NIU administrators say retention rates have nearly returned to pre-pandemic levels, and they also point to a surge in students living on campus. Student occupancy is higher than it's been in nearly a decade. Wow. And, you know, there's financial advantages for the university to have students living on campus.
Sure. Will, last question to you. We have maybe about a minute or two left. So some parts of Southern Illinois are seeing an increase in tourism and even record high levels. What's the story there?
Yeah, and this kind of fits into a statewide theme. The Metro East and the surrounding counties here in Southwest Illinois are seeing a recovery and more from COVID in the tourism industry. And like I said, the rest of the state is kind of seeing this same trend. Governor Pritzker and state officials earlier this summer had announced that the state's hotel revenue reached its highest ever figure during the last fiscal year. So I guess more specifically here for the Metro East, the two tourism bureaus that kind of cover the region, they had seen $1.34 billion with a B dollars spent in the last year. And the local tourism directors will tell you that attractions like the Mississippi River are generally really good draws for the area. Pierre Marquette State Park, which sits right near where the Mississippi and Illinois rivers join, could be a really good example. Another example could be the Enjoy Illinois 300, which is a fairly new NASCAR race over the last 2 years, and it's drawn big crowds in Madison, Illinois, which is a small town north of East St. Louis. And another reason for the uptick, the tourism directors would say they've seen some success from targeted advertising in nearby Midwest cities that are within driving distance. Think of Kansas City, Chicago, Indianapolis, and overall, these tourism directors feel like, you know, they're growing and they're trending in the right direction.
That's Will Bauer. He's the Metro East reporter for KWMU St. Louis, St. Louis Public Radio. Will, thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Jenna Dooley is the news director of WNIJ Northern Public Radio. Thanks so much for being with us on the 21st show, Jenna.
It's been a pleasure.
Coming up after the break, we'll have our political roundtable highlighting the ongoing race for Speaker of the House in D.C. We'll also have the latest on the Illinois DCFS audit. Stay with us.